Here we come, walking down the street. We get the funniest looks from everyone we meet. Hey, hey, we're the monkeys, and people say we're monkeying around. But we're too busy singing to put anybody down. We go where we want to, do what we like to do. The only time to get restless, there's always something new.
And good evening. You are listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. My name is Dana Pretzer. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. That's a good name for a show when the host is named Dana Pretzer, right? Our webpage is located at www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. That's www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. You can hear us on satellite W3957 on channel 46 and Truss Cable, and of course on the podcast at the Scared Monkeys Radio webpage. Tonight, Dwight Hicks, former NFL Super Bowl winner, motivational speaker, actor. Isabel St. James, Playboy Playmate, actress. Pamela Bach Hasselhoff, actress, survivor, singer, you name it. She's done it. All three of those folks recently took a parachute jump with the Army Golden Knights. And then Tim Miller from Texas Equisearch will be here to give us an update what they're doing and a Natalie Holloway update. That's tonight on the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Welcome. Back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name is Dana Pretzer. It's my pleasure and my privilege tonight to have Dwight Hicks. Dwight played NFL football for the San Francisco 49ers, the Colts, you name it, even up in Canada for the CFL. He's now a motivational speaker, an actor, and recently took a parachute jump with the Army Golden Knights. And it's my pleasure to have Dwight on the air with me tonight. Dwight, how are you?
I'm fine, Dana. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. All those years of professional football, Super Bowl ring, acting, motivational speaking, did you ever think you'd jump out of an airplane with the Army Golden Knights?
Well, I never thought I'd do that, but I always wanted to skydive. However, I never got a chance to do it, or I never got around to doing it. But as fate would have it, I later on in life, I get to do it, and not only do I get to do it, I get to do it with some of the best guys in the world. So that was a good thing, U.S. Army Golden Knights.
You bet. Tell us a little bit about how you got hooked up with them and the jump itself.
Well, I did a short in a 48-hour film festival called Seven. It was a spoof of the TV series 24.
Right.
And the casting director, Pixie Monroe, who cast me in that, called me one night and asked me if I would like to go skydiving. And I sort of hesitated for a moment, and then I said, absolutely.
Right.
And that's how it happened.
Who wouldn't hesitate when you get to ask that question? Now, I want to talk to you a little bit about this, and then we'll get into your career and playing football and what you're up to now. But let's talk about the jump a little bit. The Army Golden Knights are their precision parachute team. Some of their folks have been in Iraq or going to Iraq. And today is a difficult time for the military, both the families, obviously, with the conflict going on in Iraq and Afghanistan, and some of the public perception of the military. I think it's fantastic that celebrities like yourself and others who I'll have on the air tonight and Pixie arranging this are able to go out and do this and show the human side of the military and the human side of celebrities, something that we don't see. I'd like you to talk about that a little bit.
Well, I was involved with the USO for quite a few years. I went over to Japan one year to watch the Super Bowl with the troops. Excuse me, I went to Japan twice and to Korea once to watch the Super Bowl with the troops. And I think that being able to spend some time with the Golden Knights as well does show a different side of our military. And we as the public at large only hear about the military in a sense of when we're going to the war or when the Army or the military people, the organizations, are defending our country.
Right.
And sometimes that doesn't put a face on these guys. But when you actually get a chance to meet them and talk with them and rub elbows with them and get to see some of the things that they do, not combat-wise, but some of their training and other things, it gives you a more humanistic side of who they are as people, and they are individuals, and they do have families. And so I think that that sort of softens who they are, and you really get to a different aspect of who they are. And they're young men,
right,
and women, which, you know, a lot of people don't understand. You know, you see these young faces, and you're saying these are the people that are defending our way of life. And whether they agree or disagree with it politically, they don't get an opportunity to say, no, I can't do that. This is what they signed up for. And they're brave, and I respect their courage and what they do as far as defending our country and our way of life.
If you're just tuning in, Dwight Hicks, former NFL Super Bowl winner, actor, motivational speaker, is here with us tonight. We're talking about the jump that they made recently with the Army Golden Knights and the military's, image with the people. We hear the politicians babble along the way that they do, but we don't sometimes understand, like you say, Dwight, exactly what the military is all about unless there is a conflict somewhere. Tell us about some of the guys that you parachuted with, or gals.
Well, they were, number one, very professional, and I should say that they are some of the best in the world, if not the best in the world. And also, they were very funny. They have a sense of humor that was outrageous. I had such a great time with them. And they made the jump and learning about the jump, what you need to do technical-wise when you're skydiving. They made it fun, they made it interesting, and yet they were professional as well.
The jump itself, you know, I've seen it on television. I've been to air shows where you see people come out in parachutes, but that's about as close as I've got, and probably as close as I'll ever get, but you guess you never know. But tell us a little bit about the jump itself and how you were to prepare for it and what happened when you actually did it.
Okay. Well, first of all, it was canceled twice because
right.
of high wind. Once we were supposed to go, and it was really, really windy, and we couldn't. And then we actually flew to Yuma, Arizona at the training site, and we thought we were going to be able to jump, but the winds picked up, and we weren't able to jump that day as well. And I must say that the Golden Knights, as far as their professionalism, it was always about safety first.
Right.
And so although we were a little anxious to skydive, we were able to go out the next day, and what a gorgeous day it was. And we went up, and all I was trying to do, because of this anticipation and it being canceled a couple of days, I was very anxious. And so I just told myself to just relax. This is going to be fun, and remember what you need to do. And so as we got harnessed up to the, because it was a tandem jump, the videographer jumps out first, and then the guy who I went out with, his name is Mike. I forget Mike's last name. Forgive me for not remembering his last name. But he said, "You ready?" I said, "Yeah." So we duck walked over to the door. And I didn't come to the realization that I was actually going to jump out of this plane until my feet were half in and half out. And so I thought to myself, wow, you're really going to do this. And by that time, Mike said, "You ready?" I said, "Yeah." He's, "Okay, one, two, three." And what you have to do when you get ready to jump, or when you're actually jumping out of the plane, they want you to arch your body as much as you can. So I arched my body as much as I could, and I'm looking up in the sky, and it feels like you're on a ride. And then all of a sudden, because you just see blue sky,
right.
Then all of a sudden you sort of fall into the position of actually being face down facing the earth. But I thought I was going to have a sensation of falling,
right.
And it wasn't that at all. It felt like I was riding the air, and it was the best ride I'd ever been on, and it was just a wonderful feeling. Because someone told me that I would have a sense of being sucked down,
right.
Instead of falling, because you're falling at about 120 miles an hour. But it was a sense of I had a sense of calm, and I was very relaxed, and I just enjoy the ride. And it was like riding the air, sort of like someone would be on a surfboard surfing on top of the water. It felt like I was riding like that on the air, and it was just a fabulous feeling.
That's fantastic. You know, you've got, I'm looking at your stats here, 8 NFL seasons, you played in the CFL. I'm sure, you know, the Super Bowl, can you get much more exciting than that? But it sounds like this parachute jump was not only exciting, but it was a good way to clear the mind.
Oh, yes, it was. When you're coming down, or when you're up that high, I should say, and you have a perspective that only you've seen from a plane as you're going from one part of the country or one part of the world to another, and everything looks very miniature. And this day was very clear, and we could see everything. And I just took it all in. The free fall was just absolutely wonderful. It was breathtaking. And then when the chute comes up, it sort of halts everything, and it's very, very quiet. You could see for miles, and it was just a great experience.
Oh, that's fantastic. Let's talk about you a little bit, Dwight. 8 years in the NFL. Compare the NFL when you were in it to the NFL today. You see the huge contracts. You see, sadly, players passing on too soon. You see controversy, drug testing, of violence. Let's talk about it. Is it the same NFL today as it was when you were in there, and what went wrong or what went right?
Well, it's very different, as our world has changed, our country has changed. Things are changing, and they're constantly changing. So the progression of the NFL from when I played has been very drastic. The money has been there, but not as much as it is today. These huge TV contracts and with this free agency and guys being able to move from team to team, agents have the power now.
Right.
And with these kids, instead of them being able to be closer with the franchise and being able to have a sense of family, it's not like that anymore. I feel that with the big money and the agents basically controlling the attitudes of most of the players, things get a little out of hand. And also, you have a lot of kids. I mean, you're young. Football is a game for young people.
Right.
And because the body is very resilient when you're that young. And there's guys that don't have a lot of worldly experience. And then all of a sudden, you have access to millions of dollars. And if you don't have someone there to actually sort of hold your hand or mentor you as far as what you're going to experience, things, you know, kids will do what kids do, and that's have fun, and sometimes it goes overboard with the fun, and it some tragic things happen, and that's unfortunate. I think for the most part that because these guys are athletes, they are going to be in a public eye more and living in a fishbowl, so everything they do will be magnified even more. Even when I played, sure, we were in the public eye, but with the coverage that they have, what the media has today with these guys, it's tenfold.
Yeah.
So every little thing that they do is scrutinized, good, bad, or indifferent. Now, I think that's the difference of the NFL when I played compared to the NFL today. And there are some guys that still play the game for the love of the game and winning championships, but I see a lot of kids in it just for the money. It's like, show me the money. I don't care if I can, you know, if I win a championship. I'm making bank.
Right.
And that's how they feel. A lot of them feel that way, and that's sad because the fans are the ones that lose in the end, because one day they're rooting for a guy that they've been rooting for a few years, and all of a sudden he's gone. He's with another team. So players move from team to team more than they did when I played. We were able to have a sense of family, as I said before, and I think that's what made the NFL so great. And the guys that came before me made the NFL great. And I'm not sure if the guys that play today really know their history to keep the game as great as it has been. And I think that you're seeing some of that because there are some adverse things happening in the media with, you know, people, you know, with crime.
Right.
And drugs and guns. And you really didn't hear or I don't think that aspect of the players or that attitude of the players was quite like that when I played and before me. And it's disheartening to see that today.
Okay, you've had your parachute on. You've had your football helmet on. Now I'm going to ask you to put your motivational speaker hat on. You've got a crowd of college players who are going into the NFL for the first time. We've talked about the exploitation, you know, show me the money, the media, all the sort of stuff. What is your advice to them?
My advice to them would be, number one, keep the people around that you can really trust. As far as family, and if you don't have anybody in your family that you could really trust, someone that that is grounded, that has their best interest in mind, and get someone to manage your money. And I would say when you're out there, even though you don't feel or seem like you are a role model, there are young people that are watching you. So be careful and take each step slowly and make all of your decisions count, because someone is always watching.
This is a tough question. Maybe you can answer, maybe you can't, because I know you've been away from the game a little while, but let's talk about the drug policy of the NFL. Every time we turn on the television, watch the sports, we hear of the drug issues in major league sports, baseball, football, hockey, whatever. Is the NFL doing enough to protect its players?
Well, I don't think so. And this is the reason why. Whenever you're talking about big money, and the NFL is the last monopoly, one of the last monopolies on the planet. Let's face it. I mean,
yeah.
It has no one that they can compete with. They don't have any competition. The owners are like a fraternity. And each year or each time that TV contract is up, these big networks are paying hundreds of billions of dollars to have the rights to show the NFL and their product. And when you talk about big money, you have to talk about greed and exploitation. And it's a shame that it's that way, but it is that way. And I'm talking about any big corporation is like that, not just the NFL, but all big corporations, and even our government, unfortunately. When you have, you could have a great idea, but when human beings get involved and they really don't understand the responsibility of what they're doing, things get out of hand. And kids get hurt. I mean, for instance, our retirement plan is next to nothing. I think that that is criminal. I think that if you play professional football, that you shouldn't have to pay for any medical issues that you have for the rest of your life, because the risk of injury is 100%.
Right.
And as you get older, those injuries are going to become degenerative injuries. So you're going to need that medical attention. So I think that you shouldn't have to pay for any medical. We do. And that's unfortunate. And also, as far as the benefits that we get monetarily, is next to nothing. It's nothing like baseball. Guys that have played the game and put their livelihood on the line, there's a lot of guys that are destitute, and it's a shame. I think that it could change every time they have a collective bargaining agreement. Things could change, but they don't. They change a little, but they don't change as much as they should. But now these kids that are playing, and they're making all this money now, and even when I played, you don't think about when you're going to retire, because you're young, you think it's going to last forever, but it doesn't. The career span for an NFL football player is 3.2 years.
Jeez.
And to be vested, you have to play 4. So I think that the owners have that calculation, that formula that they want. Unfortunately for the players, they don't think long term. So when you talk about, you know, a players association and making the game better for the players, with the big money that these guys are getting now, that's the last thing that are on their mind. And that should be the first thing on their mind. But I think that their leadership is questionable. And I think that Mr. Upshaw, if he really looked himself in the mirror, would see that and try to make a big difference instead of a little difference in the Players Association, and because these guys put it out for the owners. Sure, they get paid, but I think that they should be getting more than paid. I think they should be taken care of as far as their mental and physical state after they leave the game.
Absolutely. Absolutely. How many industries, organizations, jobs take care of their employees after they leave? They put their life, their soul, their bodies into it, yet they're forgotten after they leave. Just before we let you go, Dwight, and I really appreciate you coming on, tell me, how does an NFL player get into acting?
Well, I was in the Pro Bowl 1 year, and I believe it was 1983. That was the third time I made the Pro Bowl. And they asked me to do a PSA, which is a public service announcement for Selective Service. And they had some script on the side of the camera, and I started reading it. And after I was done, the director said, "Have you ever done this before?" And I said, "No."
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "No, you're kidding me, man. You've done this." I said, "No, I just read it." He says, "Man, you can make a lot of money reading script like that." And I really, you know, I was young. I wanted to hit the surf and have a good time, and I really didn't think about it until years after I had retired. And I played a lot of golf and really didn't know what I wanted to do and with a lot of my time. So then I started doing some broadcasting, getting a little momentum in my life. And then I heard his voice again. You can make a lot of money reading script lines. So I went over to called to San Francisco to a talent agency, told him who I was, told him I'd like to audition for commercials. And for some reason, I said that if any acting, any films come in town, I would love to audition for them. They said, oh, you're an actor. And I said, no, I'm not. They said, oh, well, you're training. I said, no. And they said, well, you're studying. I said, no. I said, well, you must have done plays or, you know, high school, Sunday school. I said, no. I said, don't take me wrong. I just feel that I have the confidence to do it.
That's a big part of it.
And that's how it came about. And I really didn't know much about acting. But as I started to delve into it, the second film that I was in called The Rock with Sean Connery and Nicolas Cage and Ed Harris, I got to see these guys work. And I got to see the art of bringing words from a piece of paper alive. I saw these guys, these actors, bring these words to life. And it is a craft. And when I saw that, I went, wow, this is challenging. And they do it with such ease. I said, this is what I want to do. Because I hadn't had anything to really challenge me. Once you're at the top of your profession, you know, the Super Bowl in NFL, that's the pinnacle. That's what it's all about.
Right.
What is there left to challenge you? And when I saw these guys, as I, you know, embarked on this new career and I saw these guys work, I said, this is worth putting your time into. I appreciate and respect what they can do with their talents, and I want to be able to do and act like that. And so that's how it came about.
Well, in my books, you're a stand-up guy. Dwight, thanks for coming on the show tonight.
Oh, it was my pleasure, Dana.
And we'll do it again soon. Thank you, sir.
All righty.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
That's Dwight Hicks, NFL star, actor, motivational speaker. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer. We'll be right back with Isabella St. James. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Another gal that took a leap of faith, can we call it that, with the Army Golden Knights, Isabella St. James. She's an actress, author of the book Bunny Tales, Behind Closed Doors at the Playboy Mansion. Of course, she's a Playboy Playmate, and a very beautiful young lady, that's for sure. And it's my pleasure to have Isabella on the air with us tonight. How are you, ma'am?
I'm great. Thank you. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I just had Dwight Hicks on the air, and we're talking...
Oh, Dwight, what a nice guy.
You bet. We're talking about, obviously, the parachute jump with the Army Golden Knights. Tell us about your thoughts. Now, you've, again, here's somebody who has been a Playboy Playmate, an actress, written books. I'm sure you have experiences that you could write several books about and good experiences. But did you ever think that you'd take a jump out of an airplane with someone from the Army Golden Knights?
No, you know what? I never imagined I would be jumping out of an airplane ever. You know, at least an airplane that was perfectly fine. There was nothing wrong with it. I know a lot of people always, you know, talk about something they'd like to do in their life, a skydive, jump out of a plane. I was really never one of those people who would ever consider it. I just didn't think that I necessarily had the guts, and I really thought, you know, if I don't have to jump out of a plane, why would I go and volunteer to do that? But when I was contacted regarding this opportunity, it just, I instantaneously said yes, and, you know, there were no two thoughts about it, particularly because it was the U.S. Army and the Golden Knights. You know, I felt very safe right away, and I knew it would be okay, and whatever... You know, fear or anxiety I had, I knew I'd just deal with it when I got there.
What impresses me, Isabella, with this whole jump, and I had Pixie Monroe on the show a couple of weeks back talking about it before you guys actually went up and did this, is the fact that celebrities are able to go up with the military, and both of you sometimes get negative press, okay? There's been a lot of negative press lately about celebrities, about playmates. You and I will talk about Anna Nicole Smith here in a little bit. And, of course, the military get a lot of bad press. But really, without the military, we'd be in big trouble. Without celebrities and some sort of release for the public being able to watch a movie, read a book, do whatever, we would be in big trouble. Tell us a little bit about what you were able to do to both enhance your credibility as a performer and help the military.
Well, you know, I think it was a very mutually satisfying experience, and I think we both benefited. I think it was nice for them, for the guys who, you know, work so hard and deal with serious issues on a daily basis, for them to have a bit of a release and have us there. You know, it was entertaining for them. But for us, it was just such a memorable and really valued experience because we got to see these men and, you know, this humane side of them.
Right.
Because when you think of the Army, the soldiers, you see the commercials, you read the papers, and, you know, we're constantly bombarded with, you know, the people that are dying or the people that are getting killed or, you know, very negative, violent situations. And here we were in the Army, and these men couldn't be more warm and kind and entertaining. You know, I was so almost surprised by how funny they were.
Right.
You know, how clever and great sense of humor, and they really know how to have fun. They have a very serious job, and they take everything very seriously. Yet they never really lost their, you know, just being able to be personable and fun and entertaining. And I think it was just such a great experience for both. And I think it was fun for them to see that we weren't very, you know, snotty or prissy, that we really enjoyed eating the Army meals, you know. We had so much fun opening the packages. I mean, they were blown away that we wanted to eat that stuff. And, you know, we were blown away by everything they did for us. So it was just a really great experience.
Tell me about the experience. As soon as you get to the door, it's your turn to jump. What happened to you next?
You know, that was honestly the one moment I anticipated the most the whole time. You know, the plane is going higher and higher and, you know, 10,000 feet, 12,000 feet. But when that door opened up and I saw that first guy disappear in space, I was like, oh my god, I don't know if I can do this.
Right.
And, you know, meanwhile, I'm of course strapped and hooked onto, my army man, and I know it's going to happen, but it was just such a crazy emotion. I don't know. You know, it's so high up, but I think what impressed me the most was when the first camera person got there, how fast they just disappear out of your sight, how fast they're falling down. And I don't think I realized that. So it was kind of nerve-wracking but exciting. I just really, I don't know, really wanted to just be in the air already and not have to think about that threshold moment, you know, when you cross over.
And when you finally got to the ground, how did you feel?
Oh, gosh. You know, I just, for someone who writes and talks a lot, I really was at a loss for words. I really didn't know how to describe it. It was just incredible. It was such an adrenaline rush. And, you know, honestly, I think it was one of the most exhilarating experience I've ever had in my life. And I've done some pretty, you know, exciting, interesting things in my life, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. But that was definitely the top.
Well, again, I think it was a class act of you guys to be able to go out and work with the Army Golden Knights. It brings a personal side to the public of the military, not just a guy with war paint on his face growling at you with a bayonet on his rifle, that these are human beings, that you guys are, like you say, not prissy. You are people who support the military, and I think it's fantastic. Isabella, I'd like to chat with you a little bit about the press lately. You can't turn on the television, any channel, any of the cable channels, without hearing something about poor Anna Nicole Smith. This has been probably a cable station's dream, but a public relations nightmare for Mr. Hefner and Playboy. There's more to being a playmate than the tragedy that we've seen with the Anna Nicole Smith stories and the Dorothy Stratton stories. Let's talk about life as a playmate a little bit and what is done to help you live somewhat a normal life before, during, and after.
Right. You know, it's unfortunate with all the media regarding Anna Nicole. It's definitely become like a media obsession, media frenzy right now. And continues to be so. And, you know, Hef really himself is sort of, you know, he likes a lot of publicity. He likes attention. He thinks that even negative attention is good attention. Mm. So I know he thrives on that. And, you know, there was a rumor lately that he was going to marry his number one girlfriend, Holly. And while I don't find it to be particularly believable, I think a lot of things said and done in the Playboy Empire are done for attention, to keep the publicity up, to sell the magazine and continue his, you know, dream and his legacy of Playboy. But, you know, Playmates definitely do a lot of things, a lot of good things. I know he sends Playboy delegations, you know, to Afghanistan. I know they send care packages to the Army, for example. I know he does a lot of things, whatever they can, they get involved in. And there's a lot of positive things that Playboy and the Playmates do that, you know, are certainly not discussed. But when something negative happens, and, you know, with drug overdoses or, you know, affairs with famous men, that seems to always be in the headlines.
Yeah, exactly. And, again, I suppose any publicity is good publicity. You could look at it that way because it draws interest to your organization. But why are people interested? Why is there such a fascination with Anna Nicole Smith? Some would compare her to Marilyn Monroe. I don't. But why are the public so fascinated?
You know, it seems like the public really loves to build people up, tear them down, see them at their lowest, and then almost as if they're rooting for them to make it back up again. I feel like that happened with Anna Nicole Smith. You know, she came from a fairly, you know, humble background beginnings. She became a playmate. She was chosen the Playmate of the Year. She became a guest model and became, you know, famous all over the world through those campaigns. And then, you know, obviously there was the marriage to Mr. Marshall, and I think, you know, she became a stripper then, and people so you just made fun of her, basically. You know, she married a guy who was much older than her, and obviously they thought she married him for money and to take care of her. And then when he passed away and she was in that battle with his son, you know, she was the butt of a lot of people's jokes. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, she was called a gold digger, and she just used him, and now she wanted his money, and so on and so forth. And she had the reality show where she was overweight, and I think people gave them a sense, you know, it almost like it makes them feel better to see someone who was once so famous and was doing so well kind of down on their luck. I think maybe validates people. So, like I said, they bring them up to this fame and fortune, and then they watch them fall down, you know, kind of what is happening with Britney Spears, for example.
Yes.
But then, you know, when she lost the weight and she became pregnant, is that if people were rooting for her, like they wanted, you know, thought maybe this is an opportunity for her to have a stable life. She has a new baby, and, you know, maybe she'll get married and a fresh start. And then just as that was happening, something positive and something more stable in her life, she passed away. So it seems like, you know, I certainly don't think we would be having all this media frenzy had Anna Nicole suddenly passed away while she was out of the spotlight and when she was going to courts and fighting with the Marshall family when no one really heard about it. But now, you know, we've been watching a lot of interviews. She had the baby and her son passed away. And her death just became so much more tragic because of all that. It just became so magnified.
Yeah, public fascination, for sure. Let's talk about you a little bit. An author, actress, you've been keeping busy. Tell us about the book a little bit.
Well, the book is a memoir about the 2 years I spent living at the Playboy Mansion as Hef's girlfriend. You know, when I left the Playboy Mansion, I just really wanted to reflect on some of the decisions I had made. I, you know, went from being at McGill University in Montreal, Canada, to going to law school at Pepperdine University in Malibu, to literally within the month of graduating from law school, living at the Playboy Mansion.
Wow.
So I needed some time to figure out why I had done what I had done. You know, I just such a different lifestyle turn. Obviously, I wanted to be a diplomat. I wanted to be an attorney, and all of a sudden I was a Playboy bunny. You know, and a lot of people ask me questions every day about life at the Playboy Mansion. What is Hef like? What do you girls do there? And, you know, it just seems like there was a lot of public fascination with the subject. So I decided to write a book. And granted, you know, sacrifices were made and compromises along the way when you're working with publishers and other people are controlling the fate of your book. You sometimes include what you don't necessarily want to include and exclude other things.
Right.
Overall, I'm very happy with the book, and I get a lot of wonderful fan mail from girls and men all over the world, and what makes it worthwhile for me.
If you were to sit down with a group of young ladies who were looking to be discovered by Playboy, what kind of advice would you give them?
Well, you know, first of all, and you know, I do get that kind of those kind of messages and emails and questions a lot from young ladies all over the world. I would tell them that, you know, being a playmate is just one thing, you know, small thing they can do in their life, but it doesn't define them and it shouldn't define them. If they are looking to be a playmate to, you know, give their life meaning or to validate them, they're doing it for the wrong reason. You know, if it's something that they want to do in addition to, you know, having an education or pursuing different careers, then that's great. You know, I mean, you should do all that you can in your life to better yourself, improve yourself, give yourself opportunities and experiences. But I'm afraid a lot of the girls that I hear from are just almost obsessed, you know, with becoming a playmate because they think that being a playmate will validate them, that, you know, it's like a stamp. Okay, you're a playmate, you're a beautiful woman. But they don't really need that, you know. And I try to tell them to still be beautiful and accomplished and be happy in life and You know, there's only 12 playmates a year, and if you don't get selected, if you don't make it, it's really not a big deal. Like, focus on your life and remember that education is the most important thing. It gives you something to fall back on.
Absolutely. You said it very well. Your acting career, you've done some television. What else have you been up to?
Well, I have a couple movies coming out this year. I guess you could say my first kind of big break, and that should be premiering in September. It's called Thunder Over Reno, and it's about the annual Reno air races.
Mm-hmm.
They fly these amazing planes from World War II that have been restored, and so it's kind of like a romantic adventure with the backdrop of the plane races. It's really cool, and I'm looking forward to it coming out.
Fantastic, fantastic. Your webpage, www.isabellastjames.com, correct?
Yes, thank you.
And Isabella is with a Z.
Yes.
All right. Well, I've seen your webpage. You are a beautiful young woman. You have a great, great career in front of you. I think you're a class act for working with the Army Golden Knights, and hopefully we can do an interview again sometime soon.
Thank you so much, Dana. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, Isabella.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Isabella St. James. Again, her webpage is www.isabellastjames.com. We'll be back in a minute with another beautiful lady, Pamela Bock-Hasselhoff. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer.
Sentimental me. Dreaming while I live,
dreaming while I live,
living just to give,
living just to give,
all my love to you, no one else will do, sentimental me, reaching for the
Okay, we're back. It's my pleasure tonight to welcome Pamela Bock-Hasselhoff. And you're going to say, gee, that name sounds familiar. Well, if you've seen Baywatch or you've seen Sirens, if you've seen television or listened to music, this gal does it all. She's an actress, producer, she sings, she's got more courage than most do. And her and I have talked off air. I consider her to be a survivor of the system. With everything that she does in her life, plus her family, plus surviving a fairly serious vehicle accident, she's still able to plug right along, and most recently took a jump with the Army Golden Rangers, a parachute jump with the Army Golden Rangers, and we want to talk to her about that. Welcome to the show, Pamela.
Thank you so much.
It's great to have
you.
How
are you, Dana?
I'm doing fine. Let's talk about the parachute jump. Now, you know that I'm in law enforcement. I've faced down people with guns. I've broken up fights. I've been to domestic disputes. I've been hurt. But I'd be scared to death to jump out of an airplane. How did you do it? And God bless you for doing it, because it certainly was for a good cause.
It was a fantastic, most amazing, beautiful day. It was with the Golden Knights of the U.S. Army. And if you're ever going to jump, who better than to jump with, you know, an Army man that is well equipped and trained to, you know, hit every adversity there is. So me just jumping out for joy and fun was easy for them. And so because of their training and their confidence and the confidence that I had in them, there was not a fear. I said, let's go. I was high-fiving everybody in that airplane. You know, even though the door was open from takeoff to once we were 13,000 feet up in the air, I was ready. I was looking down at monopoly, though. Everything was very tiny.
Right.
But it was just a really magical day, and the group of us were really committed and excited to be there with them and to see them on a human level.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's not about Washington, it's not about the government or your politics, but it's about the individual that is there fighting for all of our freedom. And to see them on a personal level and to see the camaraderie and the beauty of them and that they're having to be separated from their families. Just what a joy and what a delight and what an honor to be invited.
And I think you say it best.
You've got to see my face, Dana. See my face.
I've seen some pictures. I've seen some pictures. Yeah, Pixie Monroe sent me some pictures, and you're having a ball, that's for sure. But I think you say it
best. Couldn't peel my smile off of my face.
Oh, you bet. You're happy. when you say the human side, these are military men and women that are, some are going to Iraq, some may have been there. But regardless, when you wear the uniform, whether you're fighting for your country or you're protecting your city or whatever you're doing with the National Guard, police, you're doing something that the public sometimes doesn't appreciate. And I think it was a great thing for you in the entertainment industry to go out and do something like this. Some will call it symbolic, whatever. But it certainly brings a human side of all of this to us that are out here that have never experienced it. Your thoughts?
Right. I am a daughter of a Vietnam veteran. And so I was raised with utmost respect, but I also saw the human side that when they come home, what they have to deal with or hide.
Mm-hmm.
And as a child, you know, I just wish my little arms could have wrapped around my father and been a comfort. I'm sure I was. But now that I'm an adult, I think, wow. You know, when I was a child, a soldier was, you know, a man. And now that I'm an adult, I look at these soldiers and think they're really children. Because most of them go in the armed forces or the military. They're 18, 19 years old.
Right.
And you go, you are beyond your years, and you're faced with something that most of us will never be faced with. And yesterday morning when I was taking my young daughter to school and on the way after dropping her off, I was driving, I see this apartment building, and there's chain link fences around it, bars on the windows. But what stood out was somebody had put stickers in the window, and it said, support our troops.
Right.
And I knew that's a family in there that's saying, you know, not only are they fighting, but we're fighting to survive as a family unit while they're fighting for all of us.
Absolutely.
So it really is. It's, they're made out of something. Yep. That is so special and that we forget to really applaud them.
Yeah, for sure.
So if me speaking of them is, you know, even a small fragment of saying thank you and wow, you just, you knocked me out of the sky. I'm so impressed. And I mean that.
Yeah, for sure. And again, you guys did.
And you say you're a police officer.
You bet.
And that says something. You know, I work here in East LA with gang members. And, you know, and the LAPD. So I get to see both sides of I guess, sometimes, you know, the adversity there. But then you meet them on a human level and you go, God, you just need somebody to believe in you.
That's right. That's what it's about, and we need more people like you to look at the humanity side of it. Let's talk about you a little bit. Actress, singer, you battled adversity yourself there, gal. You're, you know, in law enforcement, you make a judgment about somebody usually in the first 5 minutes you talk to them. And in the first 5 minutes I've spoken to you, and we've spoken a few times now, I've found you to be very forthright, very strong, and someone that's very committed to what she does. Let's talk about you a little bit and what you do.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, my first and foremost proudest is that I'm a mother of two teenagers. We've gotten thus far, and you know, what a delight every single year of their lives. They just, you know, it's another one of those can't get my smile off my face. But I'm embarking on, I've always written, and I'm right now writing songs.
Mm-hmm.
For a new album that I'm doing. I sing kind of a Josh Stone, Bonnie Raitt, little Joe Cocker in there, R&B soul, and my album's titled Transitions, which I really feel this year has been a big transition.
I'll bet.
It's all good. Yep. Put it out in the universe. It's all good. But it's a change for me, and it's a new path, and, you know, it's how you look at it, and I'm looking at it as very exciting.
What's that whole strength aspect again? And let's talk.
The strength aspect.
Yeah.
Yeah, gummit.
You know, it is, because adversity, if you can overcome adversity, however you do it, that means that you're strong. It's not just an inner strength, but you're able to bring it out of yourself. And you've gone through that adversity. And I want to talk a little bit about this in general terms, Pamela. With the news media, the way that it's been, and every time we turn on the TV or look at the internet or open a paper, we see the entertainment industry under a microscope. We've seen the Anna Nicole Smiths, who sadly pass away, and see what the industry, so to speak, did to her, or she did to the industry. How do you cope and how do you survive like yourself when you're under so much scrutiny, when you've got the flashbulbs flashing in your face and you can't go outside to open your mailbox without a paparazzi standing there looking at you or some lies or gossip being spread about you? That's what impresses me so much about you, how you've been able to survive all of this.
Well, thank you. How do you deal with it? You know, it's day by day. It really is. And you know who you are. You know what you're made out of. You can be rocked. But then you just try to shake it off and go forward and realize that if you're worried about people liking you, it is putting brakes on your life. And that doesn't mean that you don't want to be liked, but you're more focused about being the best you can be instead of let me be the best you want me to be. You gotta want it yourself. And then when you do that, you're not putting brakes. But when you're worried about somebody else, then you are stopping yourself.
Mm-hmm. There's always,
you won't be able to read everybody. And I think
sure. That
you just pull yourself up from that. And when things are sad, you've got to turn the other cheek. You do have to have a thick skin.
Yeah.
And you've got to have lots of friends. And I'm blessed. Lots of friends.
There's a public fascination with entertainment, the media, the looky-loos at a crime scene or a car accident, no matter what it is. But has this gone too far? There are so-called entertainment sites that are out there that do an exposé on celebrities that are caught with their finger in their nose, picking their nose.
Mm-hmm.
And they have 15 pictures of that, and people are surprised and amazed by it.
Well, that's minor.
and of
but
course,
I know where you're going, Dana, and I do understand what you're saying. And it's that fine line. And who's to say? You know, there's that one side where you say, well, you know, it's, you know, a constitutional right to do as you please, and that means everybody, as long as you're not hurting somebody or going against the law.
Right.
So therefore, you've got the paparazzi says, I can take whoever I want. And then you've got, you know, human beings that are, you know, in a career that's in the spotlight, but they're just doing their craft. And so it's, you know what, I try not to get too deep into that. Just
right.
See who you are and pursue what your dreams are and put it out in the universe and staying positive.
And that's
knowing, the, yeah. you know, what you're about and what you're wanting to pursue. And mine is, you know, getting my album out there, and I'm enjoying that and raising two amazing teenagers. And, you know, loving my family and my friends and keeping it simple.
I would be remiss.
And pause when agitated.
That's right.
So if we get agitated, you know, if there is a photographer or whatever it is in other people's lives,
yep.
you know, just pause.
I would be remiss with you being a singer, a music person, if I didn't ask you what you think of the state of music today. With the American Idol type shows that are on TV, every time you turn a channel on, you can be a star, or you're the next best singer, or you may not be a singer, or you can be a singer. And again, the public's fascination with that. What are your thoughts on that, Pamela?
You know, I think it's a great opportunity, but I think it's so slim.
Yeah.
Those who really make it on there. But if it inspires somebody at home or, you know, to pursue a dream and see that it's possible and it's, you know, lit your fire, just know that what you see on TV is not just easy. They work hard. And to achieve anything, you've got to put in your time, be suited up and be ready. You know, whatever profession. But in singing, it's, I do feel like, you know, they've picked some quite talented people.
Mm-hmm.
And they've made something out of themselves. And some didn't, because maybe they just didn't have, they might have had the voice, but it also takes the gumption and the wherewithal to stay with it. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Gotta, there's no time for sleep.
That's commitment.
You know, the competition's pretty thick.
That's commitment. How do you do it with kids, a singing career, acting career?
I think I'm gonna patent toothpick eye openers. Keep my eyes open. But they do say the best things in the world are done by tired people. And I like that saying, because that's how I feel. I'm doing good things, but I'm tired. But I'll sleep when it's all said and done.
You got work to do. Just before I let
I've got work to do. And one of my songs, because I got to fly with the Golden Knights, is I'm writing a song about the soldiers and my feelings. And that's something I've been doing the last couple of days since I had the pleasure to fly with them. And anyway, check out my album. It'll be out in August. You know, and I'll send it to you, Dana.
And that's Transitions. Yeah, we'll stay in touch. Just before I let you go, and I really appreciate you coming on tonight, Pamela, your words of advice, 10 words or less to someone that's wanting to break into the business, whether it's music, acting, whatever. What is your advice to them?
Do it because you want to do it. And don't look to anybody to give you the direction. Blind faith.
Yeah.
You might not see it. You might not know how you're going to get there. But put it out there and do your work to get there.
Well,
I'm not saying it's easy.
No. No, there's a lot of work involved for sure. And as a songwriter, you need to sit down, if you haven't already, and I know the album's called Transitions, but write a song about yourself. Call it Survivor, or call it One Tough Gal or something. I don't know. I'm not much for song titles, but you're certainly that. And I want to thank you for stopping on the program tonight.
Well, I really appreciate it. And big hugs and kisses to all of you. And thank you so much, Dana.
Okay, if you could just stay on the line for a second, we'll be right back here on the Dana Pretzer Show.
Well, how many people can stand up and say they had enough of rock and roll music today? If you didn't come to boogie, you didn't come to ball, you got no business being here at all. Well, it's gonna be one of those nights. It's just got to be one of those nights. Hey, people, I'm gonna give you warning. We're all going to jail in the morning. Grab some money and hold on tight. It's gonna be one of those nights. Well, we just flew in for a one-night stand. Making our music in a traveling band. Drummer start the music, pass the wine. Everybody here's gonna have a good time.
And we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name is Dana Pretzer. It's my pleasure always to have this gentleman on the air with me, Tim Miller from Texas EquiSearch. Tim, how are you?
I'm fine, Dana. How are you?
I'm doing good. How's that neck doing?
Well, it's not recovering as fast as I wanted it to, but I'm better than I was. So, you know, I'm just kind of impatient. But we still stay busy, though, in spite of it.
I'll bet you do stay busy. I wanted to bring you on the air tonight. We haven't had you on for a couple of weeks to talk about what Texas EquiSearch is up to and get your thoughts on what's been going on with the Holloway investigation.
Well, EquiSearch has been so busy. It's just, I don't even know how we do it. In fact, we went to Coffeyville, Kansas yesterday, a young girl, 24 years old. Rachel Dennis was her name, been missing for 12 days and was located in the river yesterday. They do have a suspect in custody, and these things just continue. And,
yeah.
You know, just glad we're able to help out in the search. But, you know, speaking of the Holloway case, we was actually last weekend, the weekend before, we were in Mississippi doing a search for a girl over there, and then we was in Memphis, Tennessee, actually searching for a person in the Mississippi River with our sonar equipment. And Dave Holloway actually came and helped us on both end searches. He took off work and helped us. It was tremendous help. And, you know, Dave, a real neat friend of mine also, and, you know, I just feel so bad for, you know, his loss. And one of the things we've wanted to do and haven't been able to do is get back over into Aruba,
right.
Get out in the water, 3 to 5 miles, 800 to 1,000 feet deep, and it looks like we're putting some things together that this is possibly going to happen in May.
Great.
So we've always, I think Dave, Beth, myself, many people felt as though Natalie was out in the water and that she was put in some type of container. They certainly did not want to take a chance on her floating. And I think this would be our last big effort. And we're putting some things together. We're certainly not 100% on it right now, but, you know, it looks like a very strong possibility that we're going to make this happen and go back over there and try one more time.
Excellent. What about the roadblocks, the government standing in your way? Are you going to be able to overcome that?
Well, in fact, Friday, you know, I had a little bit more information on where we stand and a possible date. And so anyhow, Friday I was going to send some emails over to Aruba, letting them know what our possible plans are going to be, what we're trying to put together, and try and cross any of them roadblocks. And I'm anticipating, and I've certainly been wrong before, but I'm anticipating that they're going to cooperate with us. I think it's, you know, it's their best interest, of course, to cooperate. But I think they want this one solved, too. You know, I think they want this saga over for their island. And if it takes finding and Natalie or parts of Natalie, and so then they can move ahead with their investigation and hopefully put this whole thing to rest. And, you know, it's going to be a very, very difficult search. And I'm hoping that, you know, the Aruba authorities aren't going to, you know, cause any major roadblocks. So that's one of the things I'm going to start working on Friday is to try to kick any of these roadblocks down.
Well, a big step would be to bring Natalie home to her family, and we all hope and pray that that will happen. How can the folks help you out, Tim?
Well, you know, right now they just need to keep Natalie and her and the family in their prayers. Keep EquiSearch in your prayers. We're staying so busy. We worked five cases yesterday. two of them cases ended up in locating the people deceased, unfortunately. Three other ones were locating them alive. One of them was actually a suicide that just, I mean, was just minutes away of being dead. And, you know, we stay busy, and of course, I don't know how we do it with the money or lack of money that we have. I mean, we're getting busier and busier. And, you know, our donations have started in proportion with our calls, and somehow or another we keep making these calls, but we've really got to look at some things right now on how we're going to continue and what we're going to do to turn this now into a business, generate the money that's going to be needed, and try to take some finances away, because I believe we've just been blessed to make it this long, and I'm really stepping back right now and looking and how we can continue on. I don't want to get to that point where we're going to have to pick and choose cases that we do that's not fair to families, but then, you know, on the same hand, you know, we can only do what our finances allow us to do, and they're getting extremely thin right now, and the point of being frightened again, and we've got a big fundraiser coming up in May, and we're just hoping we can, you know, survive till then, and you know, hopefully things will come in and make that happen. But I just never ever thought that we'd be this busy, we'd get this big, and if I'd have known it 6.5 years ago, I seriously think I would have thought twice about doing it. And but now that we're here, well, we're going to do everything we can do to stay.
Well, thank heavens that you did do it, and people need to help. What about the government, Tim? There's obviously a need, as sad as it is. Like you say, it just doesn't stop every time you turn around. I think local, state, and federal government need to help you more with that. Your thoughts?
Well, I think so. We haven't, we really haven't filed for any of those grants, and you know, I guess it's been a lot of pride in a way. We just wanted to kind of be self-supported and just think about the donations and our own fundraisers we put together. But you know, now we're seeing that, you know, the need just gets greater and greater, and it's taking us, you know, farther and farther. I mean, we're going to California next month. We're going up to Longview this weekend. There's never a day off for us. And when I say that, I mean that's the bottom of my heart. It doesn't matter if it's Christmas or Father's Day or Thanksgiving, Easter, whatever. There's not a day off. We're always out there doing something. And we've got a good board of directors put together now. And you know, I think it's going to be one of the things we're going to have to do now is really go after some of these grants. And it's not fair to Cheryl working in the office by herself, but that's all we can afford right now. And we do have some volunteers that go in and help. And Cheryl's doing a tremendous, tremendous job. I mean, it was we're just blessed getting her. And, you know, Barbara did a good job while she was there, but Cheryl just has a total different attitude. And she's friendly to everybody, and she's extremely hardworking and stays focused on the present cases that we're working. So, Cheryl needs help. We need more people in the office. We're going to have to reach out for federal, state funding to be able to continue in the way we're going.
When is the fundraiser? You said May?
May 19th, Hogs and Horses again. We're going to be giving away another new Harley-Davidson Softail Custom, and I think our raffle tickets will be ready this weekend, so we want to get all of our listeners out there to, you know, keep an eye on our website, and they can certainly purchase these. There will be one lucky winner. I know the guy that won last year worked at one of the chemical plants here in Houston, and one of his coworkers went up to him and asked if he wanted to buy a ticket, and he says, you know, EchoSearch does so much, I just give a donation. Mm-hmm. I don't want a ticket. And he said, well, since you gave that donation, go ahead and at least take your ticket.
Right.
And he was lucky one that won the motorcycle. So, you know, there's a winner out there just waiting to ride away in a new Harley-Davidson. And while they're riding that Harley-Davidson, they can look back and put a smile on their face and say, you know, money I gave for this ticket helping EchoSearch out there find one more missing person. So, you know, it's a win-win for everybody, and, you know, our listeners are just valuable to us, the support they've given us while I've been sick, and, you know, when our finances are down and everything we do, you know, all the kind words and emails and stuff, they just don't know what they mean, and unfortunately, I stay so busy, I can't email everybody back every day or call them, and I apologize for that, but, you know, we love every one of them and appreciate their support they've given and hopefully their continued support.
Oh, fantastic. Remind the folks what the Texas EquiSearch website is.
www.txeq.org.
Absolutely. Tim Miller, thank you. You're always welcome on my program.
Dana, thank you so much. God bless you all.
Take care, my friend.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Tim Miller, Texas EquiSearch. We'll be right back. Right, that's another show tonight on the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. My name's Dana Pretzer. I encourage you to check out our webpage at www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. That's www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. There you can listen to my daily commentary, listen to the show live, or download podcasts of past shows. Say that three times real fast. Podcasts of past shows. Thanks to Dwight Hicks, Isabella St. James, Pamela Bock-Hasselhoff, and of course Tim Miller from Texas EquiSearch. This is Dana Pretzer signing off tonight on the Scared Monkeys Radio Network, and we'll see you again real soon.